Welcome to episode 8 of the Haemin Lee Mysteries Resolved podcast. My name is Debbie Simons, and this week we're going to be looking at another set of alibis. So earlier, I looked at Don Kleindienst's set of faked alibis. Today, I'm going to be looking at Adnan Syed's alibis, both real and not real. Now, notice I don't say faked. They were not faked. I'm going to be talking about three people in this episode. Two of them have untrue alibis for Adnan. One of them is an indirect alibi. And one of them has what seems to be a true one. When I say untrue, however, I do not mean deliberately deceptive. There are two people in this case, a young woman named Summer, we don't know her last name, and then of course the famous Asia McLean, who told stories that seemed to indicate that the state's case about its timeline could not possibly be true. Both of them were incorrect. They were mistaken, but they were sincere. And then there's a third alibi witness who has just come to light. He was just interviewed in the Undisclosed podcast relaunch, and I will post the episode, a link to that episode in the show notes, with Colin Miller and Rabia Chaudhry. His name is Dion Taylor, and he seems to have a verifiable story about seeing Adnan on the afternoon of Hay's disappearance, January 13th. We'll get to him in a bit. But let's go back now and take a look at these two mistaken but sincere young women. Let's start with the appetizer, and that is the young woman named Summer. I call her an appetizer simply because she's much less famous than Asia McLean. So Summer was a student at Woodlawn. She was a senior the same year as Hay. And she wanted an excuse to stay after school because her boyfriend, I believe, was on some athletic team. And there was a gap in time between the end of the school day and the start of athletic practices. And she wanted to be able to hang around at school and spend time with him. But her mother apparently was saying, unless you have a reason to stay at school, you need to come home. So she's kind of casting around for something, and Hay finds out about this, and so Summer must have been in the magnet program because she says that while she wasn't close friends with Hay, she had a couple of classes with her. And Hay said, well, look, I'm a student manager of the boys' wrestling team, and I need a second student manager. You can do that, and I'll train you. So Summer says, great. Everybody's happy. Summer says, by the way, that she really liked Hay a lot, that they would joke around together, and that Hay was really hilarious. So that ties in with a point I made early on about Hay having this outward appearance of the fluffy, goofy, social butterfly that was laid over a much more serious side of her personality. I wish I could meet Hay. I would have loved to talk to her. We all, I think, recognize that the main tragic figure in this case is Haemin Lee. But let's go on. So Summer works with Hay. Hay is training her. Scoring a wrestling match is a bit tricky. I go into why it's so tricky in my book in some detail. I won't rehash that here. But they've just started the new semester, and I keep reminding myself, and by extension, you, my listeners, that Wednesday, January 13th was in the middle of just the second week of school after everyone coming back from winter break. And so I don't know when Summer had actually started with this new student manager position. She may have just started the previous week. In fact, that really fits with what ends up being the true story. So Summer called in to the Serial podcast while it was going on, and she managed to be credible enough and persuasive enough to actually get herself onto the podcast and to be interviewed by Sarah Koenig. And she told this story that seemed to prove that the murder of Hay could not have happened when the state was saying it happened, i.e., right after school on January 13th. Because she said, now, wait a minute here. I didn't really pay too much attention to this case when it happened. I didn't follow the trial. By then, I was in college and I was adjusting to my new life. She doesn't really say much about the impact of Hay's disappearance and then the discovery that she had been murdered was on her. Remember, that, of course, happens in February while all of these kids are still in school. But she doesn't bring that up. She just says, I didn't follow the trial. So I didn't know what the state was saying about when Hay was actually killed. And you'll remember that the cockamamie story that Kevin Urich and Catherine Gifford came up with about this timeline was that Hay was dead by 2:36, which is absurd. It's physically impossible, but that's been picked over elsewhere. Summer says, so she wasn't listening to Serial, but she got a call from a friend who was saying, hey, you really ought to listen to this thing. It's all about Woodlawn, our senior year. And remember Haman Lee, that girl that disappeared and then she turned up murdered, and they said that somebody else in our class killed her? Well, they're doing this big thing. It's called a podcast. You ought to take a listen. So she does. And she hears that 2:36 time being given as the murder time, and she thinks, wait a minute, that can't be true. Why can't it be true? Because I was talking to Hay at that time. So she says, when she gets on the air with Sarah Koenig, I remember that I was standing in the gym and I was talking to Hay after school, and the guys on the wrestling team were packing up their stuff, loading up the bus, and they were going to a meet. Apparently, it was a big meet that involved more than just one school, up at Randallstown High School, which was north of Woodlawn. And so Hay and Summer, of course, were going to be there as the student managers, and they were going to be helping to keep score. And I kind of have the impression from the way Summer tells the story that this was going to be her first actual meet where she was going to help score. And so she was counting on Hay to be there and kind of guide her through the process. And Hay says to her, you know what? I'm not coming on the bus. I'm going to drive my own car. You go on the bus and I will meet you at Randallstown. And Summer says, well, I really pressed her. Are you sure you're going to be there? Oh, yes, Hay said. I'll be there. But she wasn't. And Summer says, boy, was I perturbed at her. She doesn't go into any detail about, so then what did she do? Did she muck up the scoring sheets because Hay wasn't there to help her? I don't know. So Sarah Koenig kind of took this as read. Okay, well, Summer says that this must have happened on the day that Hay was murdered because she never showed up. And Summer is very, very clear that this must have been the right day. And there are no follow-up questions asked. There is no investigation launched here by the Serial team. It's obvious they kind of shoehorned her in because she seemed so relevant to the story. So fast forward to the great Susan Simpson and the Undisclosed podcast. I don't think I gave her full credit in my book, and I need to go back and change that. It was Susan Simpson who thought, I wonder, has anybody checked to make sure that that Randallstown wrestling match was indeed on January 13th? So she went back and checked, and lo and behold, the answer was no. There was no wrestling match on January 13th at Randallstown High School. So what was Summer talking about? Well, Susan discovered, there was a match on January 5th, the previous Tuesday. And that is almost certainly the day that Hay wrote that famous, or perhaps infamous, dawn note. "Hi, cutie. Sorry I couldn't stay, but I have to get to a wrestling match at Randallstown High School." And if you look at the map, you see, oh, I see why Hay wanted to drive her own car, because she could zip up to Owings Mills, which is about 15 minutes from the school. That's where Dawn works. And then from Owings Mills Mall to Randallstown High School is only about another 10 minutes. The match doesn't even start until 4:30. So Hay obviously thought, oh, I know what I can do. I can page Dawn, and I can tell him to come out and see me during his break. And then I'll get to see his baby blues. I'm not making fun of her, maybe a little bit. But if I'm making fun of her, I'm making fun of myself. I can imagine myself doing the exact same thing when I was perhaps even older than 18. And so she says to Summer, I'll be there. But she doesn't show up. So what happened? Well, I go into this in great detail on my book that I think what happened was Dawn didn't show up. He must have gotten the page. Maybe he couldn't leave on break right away. I don't know. And so she waited by his car. We are told that they had this special place where they would go out and sit during their breaks. So I'm sure that that was where she had gone. So she waits and waits. He doesn't show up. She scribbles the note, and she's about to stick it under his windshield wiper, we'll say, and then he does show up. And so she never puts the note on his car because she sees him. And then my theory, which I think is perfectly reasonable, is that she just forgot all about everything but Dawn. She followed him back into the mall. Maybe she sat in the lab with him, but she never made it to the wrestling match. And because Summer's memory is tied now to the idea that that must have been the day that Hay was murdered because she didn't show up, and surely she would have shown up, then everybody got this whole Dawn note thing incredibly muddled. But here's where the principle that hard evidence always trumps eyewitness testimony or human memory comes to bear. The records in the newspaper are clear. The wrestling match was January 5th. Summer's memory was sincere, but it was wrong. It was mistaken. And she must have seen Hay at school after that. And did she ask her, "Hey, how come you didn't show up?" We don't know. That's never asked because, of course, the implication is from her story that, of course, she never saw Hay again. Hay was dead. But Hay was far from dead. It's well over a week before the day of her murder. That sets us up now to look at the person I call the purple unicorn, no disrespect intended, Asia McLean. Asia McLean is the girl who says she talked to Adnan on January 13th after school in the library from about 2:20 to 2:25 to around 2:40. It's not very long. 15 minutes, maybe 20 minutes at the most. But the idea is, well, if he was talking to her right after school, then he could not possibly have been driving to Best Buy to kill Hay there by 2:36 p.m. That destroys the state's timeline. And there's a whole backstory here about why Asia did not testify at trial. That is squarely on Christina Gutierrez. Asia wrote Adnan twice while he was in jail awaiting trial, and she told him, "I remember talking to you in the library. Do you remember me? I am willing to talk to your lawyer. Here is my phone number." And yet Gutierrez never responded, never checked with her. And when Adnan asked her, probably through a law clerk, "Hey, Did you ever talk to Asia McLean, that girl who wrote me two letters? Gutierrez says, oh, right, yes, her story didn't check out. Well, that's not true. She's lying. Asia's story does not check out. But Gutierrez doesn't know that because she never talked to her. If she had talked to her, if she had really understood how Asia's story works, she might very well have said, look, Adnan, I'm really sorry, but this girl is remembering the wrong date, so we do not want to put her on the stand. Sincere and likable as she is, she's wrong. But that is not what Gutierrez had done. She had not checked this out. She just said she did. This, by the way, is all of a piece with the fact that she ended up getting disbarred for embezzling client funds. She's perfectly willing to lie to her clients. I just don't know about her. Okay, so we'll stop my fulminating about Christina Gutierrez, and let's look at Asia's story. Now, I had always felt that there were two big problems with her story that people were simply overlooking. People who wanted to believe so badly that Asia was the key to getting Adnan declared innocent because he had an alibi. And so these inconsistencies, these problems were just ignored. So, as I say, two of them. Number one, the content of the conversation that Asia says she had with Adnan. And number two, what she says about the weather. Now, she is going to be taken over this story numerous times. I'm not going in this podcast to go over all of those iterations. She ended up appearing on the witness stand at an actual trial or hearing exactly one time. And that was in the post-conviction relief hearings, not until 2016. And she was questioned for several days by Tharoor Vignaraja, who was running for the state attorney general position. And so he wanted to be in the limelight. So he took on the task of questioning her. And then Justin Brown, the admirable, the wonderful lawyer for Adnan. But neither one of them really understood what Asia was telling them. In Justin Brown's case, it's probably a good thing because he would have had to say, oh, you have the wrong day. And he's a very, very honest guy. I'm sure he would not have tried to obfuscate things. Vignaraja, maybe not so much. But let's look at, first of all, what Asia says about her conversation with Adnan. So bear in mind, I am putting together all of her stories and I'm presenting them as a unified whole. So she says, first of all, that she got out of school every day at 10:40 after second hour. And organized pack rat as she is, she actually had the laminated hall pass that she had been given that she could show to anybody, any teacher, for instance, who said as she was walking out the door in the middle of the morning, hey, where do you think you're going, young lady? And she could say, here's my hall pass saying that I'm only taking two classes this semester. I'm a senior. I have fulfilled my requirements except for these two classes. I don't know what they were. I postulate in the book that that probably means that Asia was not a member of the magnet program. So she knows who Adnan is. She's not close friends with him. She's not part of that inner circle or anything like that. But remember, Adnan knows everybody, and everybody knows him. So she knows perfectly well who Adnan Syed is. So it's 10:40. She goes to the library. Now, much has been made of the fact that this is the Woodlawn Public Library. It's not really part of the school. It's not the school library. But it is right across the parking lot from the high school, and the students think of it as part of the school. It's a much better library. It has computers and a bigger selection of materials than the school library itself. So she goes over there. She is supposed to be picked up by her boyfriend, Derek. And then he's supposed to take her, well, the idea is take her over to his house, take her somewhere. But she's done for the day. She says on the stand that sometimes she had a job or some kind of internship, but she didn't right at this point. She's dating Derek, and so she gets to spend some time with him. And the implication is, from what she says, if you listen carefully, she then is supposed to be home by dinner. So she sits there thinking, all right, Derek will be here in a few minutes. Well, Derek is not there in a few minutes. He does not come for almost 4 hours. Actually, it is 4 hours. He comes at about 2:40, and her class was over at 10:40. So she sits there getting madder and madder. We are never told, by the way, what reason Derek gave for being so late. And I don't understand why Asia didn't just sit there and do her homework or something, but from her description, she's just sitting at the table, tapping her fingers and jiggling her knee up and down and thinking, where is that guy? For 4 solid hours. All right, 2:15, the bell rings for the dismissal of school. Into the library in a few minutes comes Adnan Syed. And he looks over. There's Asia. She probably looks really ticked off. And he smiles at her, and she smiles back. And he comes over. He says, hi, how are you? What are you doing here? Something like that. And she explains, my boyfriend stood me up. I've been waiting here since 10:40, since the end of second period. But Asia wants to talk to this guy. She's got a boyfriend. I don't think she's really flirting with him. But Adnan is, you know, he's really cute and he's really friendly. And she's really lonely and mad at her boyfriend. So she says, I understand it's been rumored that you and Hay have broken up. Is that true? And Adnan says, yes. It's true. She wanted to date this white dude. I just hope she'll be happy. And so they bat that around a little bit. They talk for about, she thinks, 15 minutes. And then finally, here comes Derek and his friend, Jared? Jamal? Something like that. He's with a friend. He comes in and he sees that his girlfriend is talking to this cute guy. Now, Derek does not go to Woodlawn. He goes to Milford Mill Academy, which, by the way, is the same high school that Hay's younger brother, Young Lee, attends, because Young Lee is not in the magnet program, and neither is Derek, I might point out. Otherwise, he would have been at Woodlawn, too. And so Asia says to Derek, don't you pick at me for talking to another guy. Why are you so late? And as I say, I don't know what explanation Derek ever gives. So they leave. And so that 15 minutes or so blasts a big hole in the state's case, if indeed it is accurate. But I've always been bothered by the content of this conversation. It never made much sense to me. Why would Asia be saying, oh, I heard this rumor that you and Hay broke up. Is that true? When the breakup had happened 3.5 weeks earlier. And then there had been Christmas or winter break. Adnan, not that Asia necessarily knows this, but Adnan, once it had become clear that Hay really meant what she said about breaking up with him, he had said, okay. Well, it was fun while it lasted. She's a great girl. I still really like her. We are still friends. But I am getting back out into the dating pool, which he has done big time. And there are two girls, Mary and a girl named Anjalee, who actually gets interviewed very briefly on Serial. She has a great giggle, I have to say. And so he's met up with these two girls. We don't know anything else about them. We also have Saad Chaudhry, Rabia's little brother, who was good friends with Adnan, and his little paragraph in Serial is hysterical because he's basically saying, What are you talking about? Adnan was a player. So was I. We did not confine ourselves to one girl. Let's just put it that way. Adnan was out there. Adnan was having a ball. And then we know that on New Year's Eve, Adnan had gone to a party, as I have expressed in the book, and I think I've also said previously on this podcast, how Adnan got away with all this under the eagle eye and also eagle ear, if eagles have ears, I guess they do, of his mother, Shamin. It just flummoxes me. But he's able to get out and about quite a bit. So he'd gone to this New Year's Eve party and he had met the famous Nisha. And she's the source, of course, or the cause or whatever you want to call it, of the famous Nisha call that seems to be so problematic, but is actually probably just a pocket dial. Or if you want to be crass, a butt dial on Adnan's new cell phone. So it makes no sense for Adnan to say to Asia in the library, after 3.5 weeks of his being a free man and just going out and living life, to say, oh, she broke up with me. I just hope she'll be happy. He would say something else entirely. I think he would say, hey, it was all for the best. She has a new boyfriend, and I have a new girlfriend, and we're both happy. And by the way, my new girlfriend's name is Nisha, and she is as cute, as Sarah Koenig says, as cute as a chipmunk. So there. Take that, hey. I don't think he would say that last part. But that's not what he says. It all sounds very recent and raw. And I don't know why Asia would use the word rumored. It was rumored. No, it wasn't rumored. It was an established fact by January 13th that Adnan and Hay had broken up and they were both dating other people. So that's the conversation. That's the problematic conversation. But then there is also a big problem in what Asia says about the weather. And so here we get to hard evidence. You could say, oh, Debbie, what do you know about teenage conversations? Well, as I've pointed out before, I have been a teenager. But just plain old human psychology, I think, is a big debunking factor in that conversation. But if you don't think that's good enough, let's look at the weather. What does Asia say about the weather? Well, she says that the weather was getting bad around 6 o'clock, is the implication. She says she goes over to Derek's house and the weather is getting bad and she's afraid to drive. And so she calls her mother and she asks if she could stay later. Now, if you're on the bandwagon of saying that she was calling her mother sometime late afternoon, early evening on January 13th, then you have a real problem here because the weather was not getting bad at, say, 5 o'clock in the afternoon or 6 o'clock on January 13th. It was fine. It might have been raining a little bit, but other than that, the weather was fine. The ice storm is not going to hit until the next morning. And Vignaraja really takes Asia through her paces about this weather thing on the PCR witness stand. And she doesn't really know how to fix her story. She says, well, the weather was bad. I realize it wasn't really snowing, but the weather was bad. Well, what does that mean? And because Vignaraja has no clear idea of what he's trying to get at. He never really pins her down. But she could not possibly have made that call to her mother at, we'll say, 6 o'clock on January 13th because there's nothing going on. But her mother would have pointed out, as I say in the book, if she were sensible, as all mothers are, she would have said, look, Asia, get your little self home. Because there's a big storm coming, either late tonight, early in the morning, and you need to get home. there is nothing going on. Say goodbye to that Derek person and get yourself home. The way the story had been told without the details from the PCR hearing, it had always sounded as if Asia had stayed overnight at Derek's. But of course, that doesn't work at all anyway, because then she'd really be stuck when the ice storm starts at about 4:30 a.m. the next morning. So what is she talking about? If she's looking out the window at, we'll say, a little before 6, I'm postulating she was supposed to be home at 6. She was supposed to come home by dinner time. So if she's looking out the window and she's seeing that the weather is bad, that it's snowing, is what she said originally, what can she be talking about? She cannot be talking about January 13th. It was not snowing. It wasn't even cold enough to be snowing. We know it was in the 40s. That's what helps set up the conditions for the ice storm. There's a warm day. We know that day was in the 50s because track practice was held outside, blah, blah, blah. That's been gone over many times. And then there's a sudden change, a drop in temperature, and suddenly the rain turns to sleet and starts coating everything with ice. So what day is she talking about? So I didn't know. I just thought this story does not fit what we know about the actual weather on January 13th. Why isn't anybody pointing this out? And I'm bopping around on the internet the way we all do, those of us who do a lot of bopping around on the internet. And I ran across this Reddit post. Now, I've linked to it in my book. I have no idea how this person came up with this idea. She says, I think it's a she, says, am I crazy? Was Asia McClain wrong about her date? Was she actually talking about December 23rd? Oh, is that possible? That's 3 weeks earlier. Can the human memory be that wrong? Well, if you look at December 23rd, you can see, yes, there was actually a snowstorm. A sudden, quick snowstorm right around 6 p.m. And we also have independent verification of this from, of all places, Hay's diary. Because that's the day when Hay gets into her famous minor traffic accident. It's snowing, the roads are slick. She is, I think, kind of in a hurry to get to the Owings Mills Mall for her 6 o'clock shift, her 6 to 10 shift at Lens Crafters, and she loses control of the car. I think she runs into a curb. It's never really quite clear. And I think what she did was she knocked the front end out of alignment and or she couldn't get the car out of the space that she was stuck. And so that's when she pages Adnan, and he gallantly comes, even though she's just broken up with him, for good and all, and rescues her, and that's when he meets Don. And of course, she doesn't want to bother Don, because she hasn't started dating him yet. She didn't necessarily even know if he was there, although she probably did. But she doesn't want to look like a nitwit in front of this guy she's trying to impress. But she doesn't mind if she looks like a nitwit in front of Adnan because he's no longer her romantic interest. So he comes along and rescues her. And that snowstorm fits what Asia says about the snow. And then Derek takes her home later after that snow has subsided. She's talking about December 23rd. She is not talking about January 13th. And I want to make it very clear here. This in no way means that Adnan is guilty. Of course not. The Redditor, I got a little tickled with her. She says, all this time, I thought Adnan was innocent. And now I'm having to face the possibility that he's guilty. No. I wanted to reach out to her, but comments were closed. It means nothing of the sort. It just means that Asia's wrong about the day. It doesn't mean that Adnan was killing Hay during that time. He was doing nothing of the sort. We know that from many, many other sources. And we'll get to the real alibi here in just a second. So the alibi and Adnan's guilt are two entirely different things. I think that's pretty clear. I won't elaborate on it any more fully. But you have to ask the question, well, how could she be so wrong? Where did this idea come from that she had actually had this conversation on January 13th? And people have accused Asia McClain of being a publicity hog and just trying to get into the spotlight by inserting herself into the case. She's not doing that. She didn't get anything out of this except a lot of grief and inconvenience. Here's what happened. Adnan gets arrested on February 28th, and Asia says, I kind of got the idea. I remembered talking to him after school on a day when then there was a big storm and we didn't have school for the next 2 days. All right. So that's true about January 13th. There was no school because of the storm on January 14th and 15th. But that is also true about December 23rd, because that was the last day of school before winter break. So that's a Wednesday. And indeed, break started the next day, Thursday, Christmas Eve. And of course, they didn't have any school for a week and a half plus, what would it be? 2 weekends. Okay. And there was a storm. They're very similar if you think about it. And then that's the first little nudge toward the idea that, ooh, maybe I talked to him the day of the murder. So then she thinks, well, let me look this up. She's a very organized person. I like Asia a lot. She's one of many people in this case I would just love to meet. She is perfectly sincere. She is obviously really trying to check up on her memory and to tell the truth and to help out this fellow student at Woodlawn. She is not a publicity hound. People, quit saying that about her. So anyway, she says, I looked in a calendar I had. Now, this, of course, is that student agenda that everybody at Woodlawn had to have. My son was in junior high. Let's see, when would that have been? A little bit later. But he had a student agenda. All of the students had it. So that's what she looks at. But what is she looking at in that agenda? She's looking at January. Of course. She doesn't go back through the whole school year. She thinks this happened on January 13th. So that's what she looks at. And of course it says, ice storm, no school. And then she says, and I think these are the most telling words in this whole version of the story as she tells it. It just creeped up on me that that was the day that I talked to Adnan in the library. So do you see how this memory is being created? She's remembering a real event. But then she looks at something that seems to tell her when it happened. And so her mind creates this connection. It creeped up on her. Then she does another thing, and that really cements it. She talks to her former boyfriend, Justin, who's good friends with Adnan, and she says, you know, I think I was talking to Adnan after school that day. Do you think I ought to do something about it? And Justin says, yes, go tell his family maybe. You could do that. So she and Justin go over to Adnan's house and she talks to some members of his family. There's a big gathering there. She tells Adnan all about this in her letters. She writes 2 letters to Adnan when he's sitting in jail. And then that's, of course, when she says, have your lawyer call me. I'm willing to say I talked to you. But she's wrong. Asia is remembering the wrong day, and her memory made the time shift. There are real events. There was a real storm. There were actually 2 days off of school. There was actually a conversation with Adnan in the library, but it didn't happen when she thought it did. And I have to tell you, I could sit here for another 3 hours probably, don't worry, I'm not going to, telling you story after story about my own quirky memory. Memories are created, and they are recreated. We do not carry around video cameras and recording devices in our heads. We carry around flexible things, flexible ideas that get nudged and shaped and sometimes created. All right, so I said there were going to be two alibis that were not true. They were false, although they were sincere. And then there was going to be one alibi that was actually pretty reasonable. And boy, is it frustrating to realize that here's another person whom Christina Gutierrez never followed up on. Interestingly enough, this is somebody Adnan remembered. Remember, Asia contacts Adnan. The impetus comes from her. But with this real alibi witness, Adnan remembers. He says, and he told Christina Gutierrez about this, and she did not follow up. I know I just said that, but it's so frustrating. This is a young man named Dion Taylor, and he shows up in the defense files, so at least his name was written down. Colin Miller says in the relaunch that he went back and looked at a whole email string that he had created in trying to follow up this Dion Taylor. But because Taylor had moved out of the area and he had moved to California, Colin Miller was never able to get a hold of him during season one of Undisclosed. And they were wrapping up the season, going on to season two, the Joey Watkins case, which is also very fascinating, I would say. And so he never is able to get a hold of him. But then somehow Dion hears about how people were looking for an alibi for Adnan, and he reaches out to the Undisclosed team. And he gets interviewed in episode 6 of the new season of Undisclosed 2.0 Towards Justice. I'll put a link to it in the show notes. You really ought to listen to it. It's very interesting. Unlike Summer and unlike Asia, Dion has a very clear structure for this memory that then Colin Miller is able to buttress or support or whatever building term you want to use. Dion remembers that he and Adnan had the same make of car. They both drove Honda Accords, and Dion's was a two-door and Adnan's was a four-door, and Dion's car had died in that traffic circle that's in front of Woodlawn, right in front of the concession stand. And so he was standing there with the hood up, looking to see if he could figure out what was going on. He was so mad. He had just gotten this car fixed the previous Saturday, and now it had died on him again. And lo and behold, he says, here comes Adnan. And he says, hey, bro, what's up? No, he doesn't say that. I don't know what he said. And he said, hey, Dion, what's the matter with your car? And Dion says, I don't know. It just died, and I can't leave it here in the circle. And so they confer. Adnan recommends the family mechanic. He looks at it and he says, I think it's probably a loose vacuum hose, but who knows? And so Dion then eventually is able to get his car restarted and get out of the way and gets his car refixed and all is well. But Dion's memory is tied to verifiable events. Now, Summer has an event that was verifiable. It verified she was thinking of the wrong date. And that's true of Asia, too. So it's not that their stories are just free-floating. It's that when you actually look into what they're saying, you realize they have the wrong date. But Colin Miller spent some real time, it's obvious, to checking out Dion's story. And he says in the end, his story does check out. There's a whole chain of events tied to a boys' basketball game that evening and tied to the fact that Dion is playing on the boys' baseball team and they would have started practices the middle of January on a Wednesday, which of course is January 13th. And there are other smaller details that buttress his story. So if Dion Taylor, who sounds very credible, very sure of himself, if he had showed up on the witness stand, I don't think his story could have been ripped to shreds. And he says he talked to Adnan from about 3 till 3:30. So that means that if Dion is telling the truth, which I think he is, and if the state's timeline was still in play, then that would mean that Adnan would have had to have killed Hay at 2:36 at Best Buy, which is more than 23 minutes away, but we're going to take the state's timeline. And then somehow he has to turn around and get back to school driving Hay's car with her dead body in the car. And at 3 o'clock, he's nonchalantly walking out of the Woodlawn Library and he meets up with Dion in the traffic circle. No, my friends, that didn't happen. Colin goes through every day from January 1st to January 13th. And I think he definitively proves that January 13th is the only day that this could have happened. So there you have it. Two people with faulty memories who sincerely believe they're correct. One person with a real memory who finally is put on the docket. Well, the docket of the podcast anyway. If Adnan's name is ever to be cleared, it'll be from little bits and pieces of this painstaking work as done by the undisclosed team. Also, perhaps, by me. Who knows? Tune in next week, and we will continue looking at this fascinating case.